Stephen was delighted to have Peter at Abbot's Yew again, as Pat had predicted. He also was tanned from the short stay in Spain, but he had again put on weight, only a few pounds, but it would soon be a serious problem. Good food and drink were two of the occupational hazards of success, the most evident but not the most dangerous temptations that face a man who has money enough to buy whatever idly engages his fancy. Peter watched him covertly during the lunch, studying the handsome head, which was so very much like his own, the same broad brow and straight aristocratic nose, and yet was so different in small but significant details. And it was not only Stephen's thick, dark moustache. "All right, it's easy to be wise afterwards," Peter told himself, as he watched his twin brother, seeing again the little marks which only now seemed to have meaning, the narrower set of eyes slightly too close together, so that even when he laughed that deep, bluff guffaw of his, they seemed still to retain a cold, cruel light, the mouth that even in laughter was still too hard, too determined, the mouth of a man who would brook no check to his ambitions, no thwarting of his desires. Or am I imagining it now? Peter wondered. It was so easy to see what you looked for expectantly. The conversation at lunch dwelt almost exclusively on the prospects for the flat racing season, which had opened at Doncaster the previous weekend, and Peter joined it knowledgeably. But as he chatted, he was casting back along the years to the incidents that might have troubled him more if he had not immediately submerged them under an instinctive and unquestioning loyalty to his twin brother. There was Sandhurst when Stephen had been sent down, and Peter had known unquestioningly that it was unjust. No stride was capable of what Stephen had been accused of, and he had not even had to discuss it with his brother. He had affirmed his loyalty with a handshake and a few embarrassed, muttered words. "Thank you, Peter. I'll never forget that," Stephen had told him fervently, meeting Peter's gaze with steady, clear eye. Since then, Stephen's rise had been meteoric through the post-war years, in which it seemed almost impossible for even the most able man to amass a great fortune. A man had to have special talents and take terrible risks to achieve what Stephen had. Now, sitting at his brother's board, eating roast saddle of lamb and the first crisp white asparagus shoots of the season flown in from the continent, Peter was at last covering forbidden ground, examining loyalties which until then had been unquestioned. Yet they were straws scattered by the winds of time, possibly without significance. Peter transferred his thoughts to the present. Stride. Magda's control at Mossad in Tel Aviv had said just the two names, Cactus Flower and Stride. That was fact and not conjecture. Down the length of the luncheon table, Sir Stephen Stride caught his brother's eye. "Wine with you, my dear fellow?" Stephen lifted the glass of claret in the old salute. "Enchanted, I'm sure," Peter gave the correct reply. A little ritual between them, a hangover from Sandhurst days, and Peter was surprised at the depth of his regret. "Perhaps Caliph has not yet succeeded in corrupting me entirely," Peter thought, as he drank the toast. After lunch, there was another of their brotherly rituals. Stephen signalled it with a jerk of the head, and Peter nodded agreement. Peter's old army duffel coat was in the cupboard below the back staircase with his Wellingtons, and he and Stephen changed into rough clothing, sitting side by side on the monk's bench in the rear entrance hall, as they had so often before. Then Stephen went through into the gunroom, took down a Purdy Royal shotgun from the rack, and thrust a handful of cartridges in his coat pocket. "Damned vixen has a litter of cubs somewhere in the bottoms, playing merry hell with the pheasant chicks," he explained, as Peter asked a silent question. "It goes against the grain a bit to shoot a fox, but I must put a stop to her. Haven't had a chance at her yet." And he led the way out of the back door, through the orchard, towards the stream. It was almost a formal beating of the bounds, the leisurely circuit of the estate boundaries that the two brothers always made on Peter's first day at Abbot's Yew. Another old, comfortable tradition, which allowed them time to have each other's news and reaffirm the bond between them. They sauntered along the riverbank side by side, moving into single file with Stephen leading and the path narrowed and turned away from the stream and went up through the woods. Stephen was elated by the success of his visit to Spain, and he boasted of his achievements in obtaining another parcel of prime seafront property on which to build the new golf course and to extend the hotel by another 500 rooms. "Now's the time to buy. Mark my words, Peter, we're on the verge of another explosion." "The cutback in oil price is going to help, I expect," Peter agreed. "That's not the half of it, old boy." Stephen turned to glance back over his shoulder, and he winked knowingly at Peter. "You can expect another 5% cut in 6 months, take my word on it. The Arabs and the Shah have come to their senses." Stephen went on swiftly, picking out those types of industry which would benefit most dramatically from the reduction in crude prices, then selecting the leading companies in those sectors. "If you have a few pounds lying idle, that's where to put it." Stephen's whole personality seemed to change when he spoke like this of power and great wealth. Then he came out from behind the facade of the English country squire, which he was usually at such pains to cultivate. The glitter in his eyes was now undisguised, and his bushy moustache bristled like the whiskers of some big, dangerous predator. He was still talking quickly and persuasively as they left the woods and began to cross the open fields towards the ruins of the Roman camp on the crest of the low hills. "These people have still to be told what to do, you know. Those damned shop stewards up in Westminster may have thrown the empire away, but we still have our responsibilities." Stephen changed the Purdy shotgun from one arm to the other, carrying it in the crook of his arm, the gun broken open, and the shining brass caps of the Eli Kinoch cartridges showing in the breeches. "Government only by those fit to govern." Stephen enlarged on that for a few minutes. Then suddenly, Stephen fell silent, almost as though he had suddenly decided that he had spoken too much, even to somebody as trusted as his own younger twin. Peter was silent also, trudging up the curve of the hill with his boots squelching in the soft, damp earth. There was something completely unreal about the moment, walking over well-remembered ground in the beautiful mellow sunlight of an English spring afternoon, with a man he had known from the day of his birth, and yet perhaps had never known at all. It was not the first time he had heard Stephen talk like this, and yet perhaps it was the first time he had ever listened. He shivered, and Stephen glanced at him. "Cold?" "Goose walked over my grave," Peter explained, and Stephen nodded as they clambered up the shallow earth bank that marked the perimeter of the Roman camp. They stood on the lip under the branches of a lovely copper beech, resplendent in its new spring growth of russet. Stephen was breathing hard from the pull up the hill. That extra weight was already beginning to tell. There was a spot of high, unhealthy colour in each cheek, and little blisters of sweat speckled his chin. He closed the breech of the shotgun with a metallic clash, and leaned the weapon against the trunk of the copper beech as he struggled to regain his breath. Peter moved across casually and propped his shoulder against the copper beech, but his thumbs were hooked into the lapels of the duffel coat, not thrust into pockets, and he was still in balance, weight slightly forward on the balls of his feet. Although he seemed to be entirely relaxed and at rest, he was in fact coiled like a spring, poised on the brink of violent action, and the shotgun was within easy reach of his right hand. He had seen that Stephen had loaded with number 4 shot. At 10 paces it would disembowel a man. The safety catch on the top of the pistol grip of the butt engaged automatically when the breech was opened and closed again, but the right thumb would instinctively slip the catch forward as the hand closed on the grip. Stephen took a silver cigarette case from the side pocket of his coat and tapped down a cigarette on the lid. "Damned shame about Magda Altman," he said gruffly, not meeting Peter's eyes. "Yes," Peter agreed softly. "Glad they handled it in a civilized fashion. Could have made it awkward for you, you know." "I suppose they could have," Peter agreed. "What about your job at Namco?" "I don't know yet. I won't know until I get back to Brussels." "Well, my offer still stands, old boy. I could do with a bit of help, I really could. Somebody I could trust. You'd be doing me a favour. Damn decent of you, Stephen. No, really, I mean it. Stephen lit the cigarette with a gold Dunhill lighter and inhaled with evident pleasure. And after a moment, Peter asked him, I hope you were not in a heavy position in Altman stock. I see it's taken an awful tumble. Strange, that. Stephen shook his head. Pulled out of Altman's a few weeks ago, actually. Needed the money for San Esteban. Lucky, Peter murmured. Or much more than luck. He wondered why Stephen admitted the share transaction so readily. Of course, he realized, it would have been very substantial and therefore easily traced. He studied his brother now, staring at him with a slight scowl of concentration. Was it possible, he asked himself. Could Stephen really have masterminded something so complex, where ideology and self-interest and delusions of omnipotence seemed so inextricably snarled and intertwined? What is it, old boy? Stephen asked, frowning slightly in sympathy. I was just thinking that the whole concept and execution has been incredible, Stephen. I would never have suspected you were capable of it. I'm sorry, Peter, I don't understand. What are you talking about? Caliph, Peter said softly. It was there. Peter saw it instantly, the instant of utter stillness, like a startled jungle animal. But the flinch of the eyes followed immediately by the effort of control. The expression of Stephen's face had not altered. The little frown of polite inquiry held perfectly. Then turning slowly, deeper into puzzlement. I'm afraid you just lost me there, old chap. It was superbly done. Despite himself, Peter was impressed. There were depths to this brother which he had never suspected. But that was his own omission. No matter which way you looked at it, it took an extraordinary ability to achieve what Stephen had achieved in less than 20 years, against the most appalling odds. No matter how he had done it, it was the working of a particular type of genius. He was capable of running Caliph. Peter accepted the fact at last, and immediately had a focal point for the corroding hatred he had carried within him for so long. Your only mistake so far, Stephen, was to let Aaron Altman know your name, Peter went on quietly. I suspect you did not then know that he was a Mossad agent, and that your name would go straight onto the Israeli intelligence computer. Nobody, nothing, can ever wipe it from the memory roll, Stephen. You are known.